And welcome. My name is Tim Staples, and you are listening to the second hour today of Catholic Answers Live. Now, today, this hour, I'm going to be both host and guest. So bear with me. This might get difficult at times, juggling all of the duties here. But we just had a fascinating hour with Colin Donovan in the first hour from EWTN. And we're going to go right back to the phone lines here for our second hour. But remember, folks, you are the one that's going to make this exciting this hour, okay? So we need your help. We need you to call in with your questions. And you don't have to be Catholic. In fact, we welcome non-Catholics to call because we want to know why you're not Catholic. And for our Catholic friends, maybe you just need some clarification on things. You can call as well. That number is 888-318-7884. We are all about giving Catholic answers here. That's what we are about. So give us a call at 888-31-TRUTH or 888-318-7884. And with that, we're going to get right back to the phone lines as promised. And we have Deborah calling from Ontario, Canada, listening on YouTube. Hello, Deborah.
Hello.
Well, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you very much.
All right. What's on your mind?
My question is, can a priest leave the priesthood and get married? And if so, what is required? I have to say, I was reading St. John Paul had pulled in the reins on how often or how easy that was to do, to gain a dispensation, I think.
Right, correct.
And I'm wondering about now, because a priest friend of mine just announced he was leaving and getting married. And this really is causing a crisis of faith for a number of people.
Right, yes. Well, Deborah, it's a great question, a very important question. I, too, have a dear friend who left the priesthood and is now married, but he did it the right way. And it is true that you can leave the priesthood and eventually get married. But, you know, if you're a religious and you have a religious vow involved in your holy orders, or if you're diocesan and you have a sacred promise that you have made, these are grave matters, and they bind gravely on the priest. And so the only way to licitly get married is you must, as you mentioned, you must be dispensed from that vow or that sacred promise. Otherwise, that would be an invalid marriage and you would be living in sin. So I mentioned that I have a dear friend who was a priest. In fact, he was my pastor a few years back, and he ended up leaving the priesthood. He went through a process called laicization, and that's what has to happen with his ordinary, and it is a process, and it's not automatic, as you mentioned. Like, it's kind of analogous to an annulment. Annulments are not automatic, as much as people want to say, you know, annulments are just Catholic divorce. In fact, I know of cases of people's annulments that were turned down, and so they were not free to marry again. And so it is a process that the Catholic Church takes seriously. And as you mentioned, Pope St. John Paul kind of pulled the reins in on both annulments and laicization of priests. But this is the prerogative of the Church, and the Church can dispense from those vows or sacred promises. Great question, though, Deborah, and we're going to move to our next caller. But I want to mention, folks, that, you know, I like to encourage folks to call because, you know, I said at the outset, you really make this broadcast as a call-in broadcast. But I want you to think about something else, too. When you call in a question, you're not just asking for yourself. There can be hundreds, if not more, of people who have this the very same question. So don't be shy. Call in your question at 888-318-7884. And you're not only going to get blessed, God willing, with good, accurate theology and philosophy, but you're also going to be helping others as well. And with that, we'll go to Jose calling from Somerset, PA. And did I forget to give the number? It's 888-318-7884. If you want to get in your questions, remember that can be on any matter of faith and morals or juridical matters, discipline in the church, our practices. Give us a call, 888-318-7884. Again, we're going to go to Jose calling from Somerset, Pennsylvania, listening on EWTN on Sirius XM 130. Hello, Jose.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
I am doing great, man. Welcome to the... Oh, are you a truck driver?
Yes, sir.
I just heard that horn. Now, I didn't get to ask you, though. I wanted to ask you, toot that horn. Go ahead. There you go. Okay, Jose, what's on your mind?
Well, it's been a long time since I last talked to you, and prior to that was very long time because Mr. Coffin was in the house as the
yes,
old.
Yes.
But I came across and well, let me say first that thank you for your ministry because you allowed me to kind of stick to my faith.
Praise
and
God.
Actually defend the faith. And I view a lot of YouTube, which is like you might say almost fake news for the most part.
Right.
But there were a couple of preachers, non-Catholic. One was like on the streets getting filmed, talking about fire, brimstone, that if you're on the list, fornicator, sinner, drunkard, you're going to hell, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it was in front of churches, telling that people shouldn't go into churches because they're bowing to statues, they're
right.
praying to Mary. The Bible doesn't say to pray to Mary.
Sure.
And the priest, that you're crossing yourself. And then there's one that I kind of like started to respond, but I kind of stopped halfway because I was running out of time. And that one there was a YouTube titled The Five Reasons That Mary Is Not... perpetual virginity, that she's a sinner, and
yes.
blah, blah, blah. You know, they went down, one went down the list, and the one I responded to was from the very beginning in Genesis that God told Satan or the serpent that I would put enmity between you, your seed, and the seed of the woman,
yes.
meaning that if there's enmity, there's the enemy between you and the woman, and
yes.
how can Mary be a sinner?
Yes.
It just went on, and then my final response to that one was, well, why don't you get Tim Staples' book, Behold Your Mother?
Yes.
Because, I mean, there is so much explosion in me. Like,
yes.
I just feel like in one of your talks, say, you know, with Matt Dula saying, you say something about my Mary and I'm going to duke it out, and that's how I felt.
Yes, yes. Well, Jose, I really appreciate your call, and I know it can be frustrating at times because sometimes you feel like you're trying to drink from the proverbial fire hose when somebody is you know, kind of spouting out with so many different things all at once. But I think you're on to something, Jose. What I recommend that folks do in a situation like that, if you feel like God is calling you to kind of intervene, so to speak, and to share the faith or to evangelize with some of these street preachers or even online, you know, folks that are... we believe, we hope, well-intentioned, right? But are caricaturing the Catholic faith in so many different ways. What I think the mistake a lot of Catholics make is in thinking that they have to answer everything, right? No, you don't have to answer everything. Let them go. Let them unspool and say, all you got to do, and I think you did this right, Jose, is pick the one that you're most comfortable with responding to and just say, excuse me, you know, could I just jump in here for a second? Because really, if you plant one seed, if you present a solid argument for one thing, I will guarantee you, as one who has experience, it happened to me, as you know, Jose, meeting Sergeant Matt Dula all those years ago, hard to believe, 34 years ago, when I met Matt Dula in the United States Marine Corps, he just started pecking away, and he made good arguments. And then at nighttime, I can remember times, Jose, at night, I couldn't sleep because those verses were bouncing around my head. I would have to get out of the rack in the middle of the night and go get my Bible and try to refute these Catholic arguments. And it drove me crazy. And so I was determined I was going to prove the Catholic Church wrong. And that's really how I became Catholic. So God bless you, Jose. You planted a seed. And really, that's all we can do as Catholics who love our Lord and Holy Mother Church. But we are going to have to take a break right now. And Anonymous, Jenny, John, Ellen, Bob, hang on and keep those calls coming at 888-318-7884. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and more Catholic Answers.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Catholic Answers Focus is our favorite podcast, and it could be yours too. Find it at CatholicAnswersFocus.com. This week starts with two sorrowful feasts. So on Monday's episode, we asked Father Hugh Barber about why we Catholics celebrate sorrows. The topic seemed especially appropriate for 2020. And then on Wednesday's episode, we gave Jimmy Akin two simple tasks. Explain the Kalam cosmological argument and tell us whether it proves that God exists. Jimmy, of course, nailed it. Catholic Answers Focus is available wherever you get your podcasts. Right now, seriously, it's available. You can check Catholic Answers Focus.
Wings is the weekly newsletter that's packed with program info, features, and updates of all that's going on at the Global Catholic Network. Just go to ewtn.com/wings. Fill out your name and email address, and you'll start getting your wings every week. When you get yours, send it to all your friends, and they can send it to their friends. And pretty soon, we're covering the whole world with the good news about EWTN. Wings, the weekly newsletter from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
And we are back live. You are listening to Catholic Answers Live. I am your host and guest for this, our second hour open forum. That means you're going to determine what we talk about, folks. So give us a call at 888-318-7884. That's 888-31-TRUTH. Anything you want to ask about Catholic faith or morals, discipline, juridical matters, our practices, whatever you want to talk about is what I want to talk about. So once again, give us a call at 888-318-7884. Now, let me ask you a question. How would you like to be able to answer questions about the Catholic faith and the Bible like Jimmy Akin, Carlo Broussard, Trent Horn? The good news is that you can. With hard work and the right tools, you can learn Catholic apologetics, folks. You can learn how to be an apologist. How? Well, we've got our brand new Catholic Answers School of Apologetics. You enroll, and I will guarantee you, you are going to learn a ton. Now, you'd say, well, how about if I get a sampling first before I sign up? Well, we've heard folks say that, so guess what? We've got a killer opportunity just for you. That's why right now we're offering our listeners a chance to take a free trial lesson out of Jimmy Akin's module, Beginning Apologetics. That's right. Go right now to catholic.com/free trial and sign up for your introductory lesson. If you like what you see, and we know you will, we're confident you'll take advantage of our $50 off special and sign up for the whole course. That's catholic.com/free trial. Register now for your free lesson. I know I just completed a course on the apologetics of ecclesiology, or we're calling it proofs for the church, that will be coming out soon. We have a lot more courses coming. It is exciting, folks. We hope to end up with hundreds of courses for you in Catholic apologetics. All right, now with that, we're going to go back to the phone lines, and let's go to Anonymous. Hello, Anonymous.
Hi there, Tim.
Hey, so, welcome. Talk. You know, we have quite a few people named Anonymous that call in. So you've got a common name.
Yeah.
All right, welcome to the broadcast.
Yeah, I sure do.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Well, I have a myriad of problems, and I'm just kind of needing guidance for hope, but okay. I'll name only a few because, like I said, there's a myriad of them.
Okay.
And I will do the Jim Carrey exhale of breath. I'm going blind. I just got a divorce. My wife, or ex-wife, converted to the way of paganism. She's now considered herself awakened. And then I'm having a strong feeling that the Catholic Church is so divisive. I am so dangerously close to becoming an atheist.
Right.
So those are the main things that is bugging me.
Yes.
Now, the divisiveness. I go to Our Lady of Mount Carmel, and there's a priest. He's an SSP priest, if you know what that means.
You mean SSPX?
No, not them. No.
You mean the FSSP? FSSP,
yeah,
Fraternity of St. Peter. Yeah, that's a wonderful, wonderful
exactly.
group. Yes.
And I told the priest there I was considering going to the Byzantine Church, and he goes, no, they're too schismatic. You are not an Eastern Catholic. You are a Western Catholic. I'm like, okay. So then with my wife, we were married for 17 years, and she had a hard time finding a job for so many years. She converted to paganism. She got her answers, prayers. Her prayers answered. She now just got her job that she'd been wanting and got two interviews lined up. So, and then with the church saying I can't remarry, we had a valid Catholic marriage. Mm-hmm. And God willing, I'm going to have many years to live.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not allowed to remarry, so I'm feeling very lonely.
Right.
So that boils all down to,
right,
can you give me some guidance to hope?
Sure. You know, first of all, one thing kind of jumped out at me when the priest said, and maybe he didn't understand you, if you're talking about going to a Byzantine Catholic church, that's not a schismatic group at all. Now, if it's an Orthodox church that's not in union with the Bishop of Rome, yes, that's schismatic, and you don't want to go there. But if it's a Byzantine Catholic church, they are in full communion with the Catholic Church, so that is certainly a viable option. I'm assuming that you were talking about an Orthodox parish that's not in union or in full union with the Bishop of Rome. But, you know, to get to the heart, I think, of your question, you know, whenever we experience hardships, pain, suffering in our lives, to me, the place we always have to turn is to Jesus Christ. We used to sing an old song in my Protestant days, "My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus Christ and His righteousness." And we believe that as Catholics, that our hope is in Jesus Christ. And I would like you to focus there, my brother. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church tells us in paragraph 643 that Jesus Christ, His life, death, burial, and resurrection can be understood as nothing more, nothing less than an historical fact, right? This is an historical fact. Now, when I say nothing more, of course, there is more than just the historical fact. There are the mysteries of the faith that take us beyond that historical fact. But it's important that we understand that it is a historical fact. Jesus Christ really did live, really did die, was resurrected from the dead. There are over 500 eyewitnesses in the first century of that resurrection. We have the apostles, of course, who were at the time of the crucifixion, scurrying in every direction. They had lost their faith, but when they saw the resurrected Lord, it transformed them. They became martyrs for the faith. We have Saul, right, who Paul, the future apostle, Paul, who was an enemy of Christ, who was there when Stephen was stoned to death. He was holding the coats of those who did it, and he persecuted Christians. But when he saw the resurrected Lord, it transformed his life. Brother, this is real. Jesus Christ really did live, really did die, and he is resurrected from the dead. And my brother, one of the central things he did when he walked this earth was establish the one holy Catholic and apostolic church. And that's why you need to be Catholic. And that's why you need to stay Catholic, because Jesus tells us in, for example, Matthew 18, 15 through 18, if we have problems in our lives, we need to, and we're confused, you ultimately take it to the church. And the one who fails to hear the church, Jesus says, is to be as a heathen and a publican for whatever, and I'm referring to, again, Matthew 18, 15 through 18, for whatever the church binds on earth is bound in heaven, whatever the church loses on earth is loosed in heaven. So when the church gives us the truth of sacraments and salvation, justification, Mariology, the papacy, and on we could go, that's Jesus Christ speaking to us. And my brother, Anonymous, that's the source of our hope. Do not leave the church, which is Jesus Christ, extended into this world, because if you do, you lose the very source of your hope. Because it is only in Jesus Christ that we can overcome all the obstacles of this life, my brother. It's only when we have the hope of Christ in our hearts that we can say with St. Paul in Romans 8:18, the sufferings of this time of this world are not even worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed. So again, my brother, I encourage you in the midst of all of this pain and such, now's the time to embrace your Catholic faith in an even more intense way. Get to Mass, get to confession, let Jesus get the sin out of your lives and anchor you in the faith. Does that make sense, Anonymous?
It certainly does. And like my Catholic friend at work said, eyes on the prize.
Amen, brother. Eyes on the prize. I think that says it all. God bless you. Thanks so much for calling. And wow, you know, for all of us, I think Anonymous, I know for me it was a shot in the arm. We have to be reminded over and over again that in this life, my friends, you know, as Paul said, if Christ be not raised from the dead, we are of all men most miserable, most to be pitied. Because if this world is all there is, man, there ain't nothing. I don't know how people can live without the hope that comes in and through Jesus Christ and in and through our one holy Catholic and apostolic faith. Well, with that, let's go to our next caller. We've got Jenny calling from Chattanooga, Tennessee, listening to EWTN on Sirius XM 130. Hello, Jenny.
Hi, Tim.
Welcome to the broadcast. What's on your mind? Yes.
Thank you. Well, thanks for your work. I joined the Catholic Church a few years ago after being a lifelong Bible-only Protestant.
All right.
Your testimony and work really played a big part in my conversion, so thank you.
Oh, praise God.
So I have a question about chastity. I have a lot of close friends who are Protestants.
Yes.
So I'd like a way to talk about chastity and marriage,
yes,
aside from anything to do with natural family planning.
Right.
I haven't found a good way to explain chastity and marriage without that coming into it.
Okay.
But like to most Protestants who, you know, have no qualms with contraception, if I bring that into the explanation,
yes,
that just doesn't work because it's not something that's part of their marriage. So I know chastity and marriage is something, you know, that we're all called to.
Yes, we are.
Any Christian marriage. So I'd like to be able, yes, to explain it without that being part of the explanation. Does that make sense?
Sure, absolutely. You know what? I'm going to take it from a different tact that you may not have considered before. And it can also be a way to evangelize at the same time. In my book, Behold Your Mother, A Biblical and Historical Defense of the Marian Doctrines, in the section on the perpetual virginity of Mary, one of the demonstrations I give of why it's so important that we understand the perpetual virginity of Mary is she is, and St. Joseph, the paradigm for us in understanding that it is God who makes the rules for marriage, not us. And when God intervenes, as he did in Mary and Joseph's life, whether you're Protestant or Catholic, this was not your average marriage. God called in a particular way, and they responded and obeyed because it's God who makes the rules. That can kind of be a first step in, and I'll tell you what, we'll take the next step after this break. We do need to take a quick break, but when we come back, more of your calls, more with Jenny, and more Catholic Answers.
Listen. Have a question? Listen. We've got answers.
Catholic Answers.
I love it.
Live.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Who are the Jehovah's Witnesses and what do they believe? How do you respond to their claims that God isn't a Trinity and Jesus isn't divine? What's the best way to evangelize Jehovah's Witnesses when they come knocking at the door? In 20 Answers, Jehovah's Witnesses, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, giving you the knowledge you need to respond to friends, family, and missionaries who try to steer you away from the church and into Kingdom Hall. 20 Answers, Jehovah's Witnesses is part of the 20 Answers series at Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Everyone can influence others,
especially those who are celebrities or high-profile individuals.
How do you feel most of them use their influence?
Let your voice be heard on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
And we are back live on Catholic Answers Live. I'm your host, Tim Staples. We are having some fantastic conversations, and you are free right now to join in on the conversation because this is open forum. You can ask anything you want to about our Catholic faith, morals, juridical matters, discipline in the church, our Catholic practices that a lot of folks don't understand. Give us a call at 888-318-7884. I'm going to try to get to your calls and your questions at 888-318-7884. Okay, and we are in the midst of a conversation with Jenny. Are you still with us, Jenny?
I'm here, yes.
All right, well, I wanted to pick up where I left off, because when I talk about the Blessed Mother, again, this doesn't have to be a Catholic or a Protestant, because we all agree here that Mary and Joseph had a somewhat of a unique situation, because you don't give birth to God every day, right? In fact, that only happened once and never will happen again. But remember, when Joseph was ready to divorce her because she came up pregnant, the angel intervenes, or the Holy Spirit through the angel, and says, "Fear not to take your wife." And why? because the child conceived in her is born of the Holy Spirit. And Joseph, even though he didn't have full understanding of what's going on here, he obeyed God. And so the most important point is for us to understand that in marriage, God is the creator of marriage. It's rooted in our natures. It goes back to Genesis, you know, chapter 2, verse 24, male and female, he created them. They became one flesh. This is foundational to who we are as human beings. It's so crucial for us to understand and to understand God makes the rules. And so now, God doesn't always send an angel, right, to reveal to us our particular calling in marriage as he did with Joseph and Mary. But he does give us the rules, both through natural law. These are things that all of us can know just through reason, because remember, marriage was around, and this is something too that I think is important for us to try to help our Protestant friends to see. Marriage began before there were any nations, before there was any religion, right? There was marriage because it's written into our very natures. Adam and Eve, the first marriage, was, talk about made in heaven, well, it was made by God in their very natures. And so the rules, again, are established by God. And some of those rules, again, we can know by nature. If we could talk about that just for a second, we can help people to understand that, look, you know, St. Paul talks about in Galatians or in Romans 2, 14 through 16, the law, as Colin and I talked about in the first hour, natural law, or the law that's written in our hearts. Right? We can understand things like it's not good to eat your neighbor. Right, Jenny? I mean, I don't think cannibalism is a Catholic-only club to say no to, right? This, by nature, we can know things like murdering the innocent and such are contrary to nature. Well, adultery is another thing we can know just by using our common sense. And how do we know that? Because we can know as Catholics, as Christians, as men and women of goodwill, that there is a purpose to the conjugal act. And I find, Jenny, that folks who are not even Christian can understand this. I had a conversation not long ago at a coffee shop, maybe a year ago, maybe a little bit more than a year ago, with a young college student, believed in, well, maybe there's a power up there, but didn't really believe in God, although by the end of our conversation, we made some headway. But I shared with him this. I said, look at the nature of the conjugal act. It has a purpose. Why is it, Jenny, that we can look at everything in this universe virtually? I mean, we can look at a tree and we can know that a tree has roots that sink into the soil. You know, it's a perennial plant, sprouts leaves in the right time, and fruits if it's an apple tree, an orange tree, and such. And we can know certain things about that tree because of its nature. Like if you pour battery acid on its roots, that's not good for the tree. In fact, it can destroy the tree. It's not good because we know the nature of the tree. Well, the same can be said for a human being or for any human action. Each action has a nature. Right? Lying. This is something that my friend who wasn't even a Christian agreed with me on. I said, can you agree that we have a communicative faculty? That is, we are made to speak the truth, and therefore it's not good to lie. Or would you say it's good to lie? Of course it's not good to lie. Why? Because we have a communicative faculty, and the purpose of that communicative faculty is truth. So if we purposely lie to someone, we're acting contrary to the nature of the communicative faculty. We're therefore acting contrary to our own natures. I think people can understand that the sexual act as well can be understood. It has a twofold purpose. That is the union of one man, one woman, and the procreation of children. And so if you do any action, and by the way, whether within marriage or outside of marriage, we're talking about nature here, any action, conjugal action. Now, of course, because the conjugal act is for the purpose of the union of one man, one woman, and procreation of children, it must be in the context of marriage that safeguards both of those. But any action, whether in marriage or out of marriage, that is contrary to that union of one man, one woman. In other words, you run around with your lover outside of your marriage. That's contrary to the nature of the conjugal act, or contrary to the reproduction of children. So if you're doing, you know, sorts of immoral things within marriage that render the conjugal act infecund, or in other words, sterile or unable to produce a child by nature, then that action is gravely immoral whether you are married or not. So these, I find anyway, Jenny, to be principles that the church and natural law gives to us to where we can start having rational conversations with people and help them to see that, yeah, you can't just do whatever you want to do in your marriage. You must be faithful because the nature of the conjugal act, you know, implies, more than implies, a commitment to that one woman, or if you're the woman, that one man, as well as an openness to life. So if you think about acts that you're performing, whether you're married or not, if they're not in keeping with those two essential ends, you're hurting yourself, like pouring the battery acid on that tree. You're hurting the tree. You're hurting yourself. And it has ramifications beyond yourself as well, because marriage, remember, is a public institution. There's no such thing as a purely private marriage, because marriage by nature is public and has effects beyond the couple, namely children that come into the world, as well as a communication by the way in which we live as to the nature of marriage. So there's all sorts of things that we can bring into the conversation. But does that kind of get things started, Jenny?
It does. It does help. I guess part of it for me is I just need to have the courage to be willing to say those things and
yes.
Face the looks of you're a complete and total weirdo.
Oh, yeah. Jenny, we just had a caller yesterday call in and called us bigots and you name it because of our position on homosexual acts being gravely disordered. As you know, Catechism paragraph 2357 says, but you know what? After a conversation that went somewhat similar to what the conversation is right now, I think we made some headway, because we can, in fact, and I think that's important too, Jenny, is to know, and not only you, but all of our listeners, to know that this stuff works. It's real. And if you share these principles with people, guess what? It's going to sink down into their souls and into their hearts, because every human being has the natural law written on their hearts. And so in order to continue in these gravely sinful actions, they have to act against their own natures, as well as the mysterious prompting of grace that's known to God alone. I mean, God is giving grace in ways we don't even know to that person we're talking to. But when we have that confidence to understand that principles of natural law are real, they are true, and the revelation we've been given as well about nature is real and it is true, when we share this faith of ours, the Holy Spirit is going to work confirming His word, and He's going to, to use my best theological language, He's going to zap them, right? He's going to convict, as you know, St. John tells us, one of the principal things the Holy Spirit does is convince the world of sin. But Jenny, thanks so much for your call and a really important question. But right now, I can't believe that clock's moving too fast, if you ask me, but we got to take a quick break right now. But when we come back, Fraser, John, Ellen, Bob, Cameron, hang in there. Try to get to your questions right after this break.
Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
And I wanted to tell you guys how great your show is, because I listen to you guys for every day for the last past 5.5 months. It's because of you guys that I came to the Catholic faith. Now I'm going to church on Sunday for the first time, because I just got out yesterday from jail. And I got my mom to go too, and my girlfriend is also going with me.
Wow.
She's willing to give the Catholic faith a try.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
And we are back live. My name is Tim Staples. I am your host this hour of Catholic Answers Live. And man, we've been having some great conversations over the last couple hours. If you want to get on the conversation, I'm going to give the number out one more time. That's 888-318-7884. Again, 888-31-TRUTH. And as promised, we're going to get right back to the phone lines. We have Fraser calling from Bolton, England, listening on YouTube. Hello, Fraser.
Hi there. Hi.
Oh, hey, brother, you know why we put you to the top, right? It's not just because you're calling from England, but because we love that accent.
Yeah, I thought that might help, to be honest.
Yes. So what's happening, Fraser? How can I help you?
Hi. I've been reading a few different things recently about Calvinism.
Yes.
And the sort of ideas about predestination. And it's something that I intuitively felt quite uncomfortable about it. I didn't like the idea of not having free will.
Yes.
But the more I thought about it, if God is all powerful and all knowing and God created us, then God already knows the choices that we're going to make.
Right.
And so some of those choices may cause us to fall out of grace and to, you know, possibly go to hell.
Right.
So it makes sense when you think about it logically. So how do you kind of refute that position?
Sure, Fraser, it's a great question. I want to emphasize first that the church has been consistent for 2,000 years, all the way back to in the 4th century. There was a heretical group known as the Predestinarians. They were kind of the precursors of John Calvin, and they were immediately pounced upon by the magisterium when they began to teach that predestination means ipso facto that you don't have free will. That has never been taught by the Catholic Church. That is false. In fact, the Council of Trent would deal with it beautifully in Session 6 on justification. If you read the canons, especially Canon 17, but there's a couple other canons like Canon 4 that just nail it to the wall that we cannot deny free will in our understanding of predestination. Now, there are different ways of communicating the mystery of predestination, but in whatever way you present it, as a Catholic, you better not do it to where it eliminates free will, because then you're on the wrong side of the magisterium. The Catechism of the Catholic Church, for example, in paragraph 1037 says, quote, God predestines no one to hell. In order to go to hell, one must freely commit a mortal sin and remain impenitent in that sin until death. And so the church makes it very, very clear. But now, to get to your question, I just had to kind of lay that out for you. But the fact that God knows, and this is the key point here, that he knows what we are about to do. In fact, because he is omniscient, he can't not know, okay, and still be God because he's omniscient. But knowing something is about to happen does not mean you cause it, you know, in that strict sense of John Calvin, to where there is no freedom. St. Augustine used an analogy here, and it is an analogy, and no analogy is perfect. But Augustine says, you know, to God, and we have to understand this, to God, there is no past, present, future. There is the eternal now. He knows all things, right? Well, the fact that he knows the past, and by the way, we can know the past too, doesn't mean he caused it, right? The fact that he knows and we can as well know things that happened in the past doesn't mean he caused those things in the past to happen. It simply means he knows them because this is the nature of God, to be omniscient. Well, in the same way, God in his cognition knows the future just as you and I, in fact, better than you and I know the past, because we don't know the past perfectly like he does. And so his knowledge of the future, just like our knowledge of the past doesn't cause the things in the past to have happened, God's knowledge of the future does not cause those things to happen. Now, here's a more perhaps easily understood analogy. There are certain things I can know, for example, are going to happen. I have a cup of water in my hand right now. If I move this cup over to the edge of this table and push it a little bit farther, guess what? I know what will happen, right? That cup will fall to the ground and the water will pour out, okay? Well, if it's not me pushing it, but it's Nick pushing it, I can know the same exact thing. If Nick takes his finger and pushes that cup, it's going to go over the edge. And as he pushes it, I can say, oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Oh, what did I tell you? And it happened. But does that mean I caused it? No. I simply knew what was going to happen because I know laws of physics. And I know if he does this, this is going to happen. Well, analogous to that, God knows everything that's going to happen. And again, there's various different ways in which the church and great members of the church, great theologians have tried to explain theologically this great mystery of predestination and how God knows the future. But I like Cardinal Bellarmine. He kind of uses the analogy of the mechanic who knows. Now, Bellarmine didn't know what a car is, but let's use the example of a car. If somebody builds a car from the ground up and they know it so well, they know what it can do. They know what it will do when it encounters certain circumstances when it's driving on the road. It doesn't mean that the man causes everything that's going to happen. It means he knows the car so well that he can tell you what's going to happen when it encounters certain things on the road. That's another analogy of how, well, God knows us inside and out. And in fact, he is the first cause of every one of our actions. The first cause. We are secondary causes, but he's the first cause. So he knows us so well that he knows everything that we are going to do, but it doesn't mean he causes it. So those are a few ideas, and there's lots more in our tradition. But does that kind of get at it, Fraser? The idea is that knowing something is going to happen does not necessarily mean you caused it.
Yeah, I think that really clears things up. And I think it's interesting going back to Augustine as well, because I know that a lot of people say that Augustine kind of was, a lot of Protestants would say yes, that Augustine was an early founder of their ideas as well. So that was really interesting. Thank you.
Yes. Well, God bless you, Fraser. And I encourage everyone to read St. Augustine's letter on grace and free will. You read that and tell me he's a Calvinist and you did not read that. St. Augustine was not a Calvinist, but I appreciate that call, brother. And we don't need another break, right? We can cruise to the finish here. No more breaks, right? Good. All right. Let's go to John calling from St. Louis, Missouri. And John, you are on Catholic Answers Live. What's happening?
Hi, Tim. Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Welcome.
So I was reading, or I tried to read, I got probably through a third of it, the
yes,
USCCB's article on forming conscience for citizenship.
Yes.
And so I kind of understand that the basic premise of, you know, forming a conscience on who to vote for is that,
right,
you know, pro-life issues have to be preeminent. They have to be the number one.
Correct.
They have to be the number one on your, you know, idea. But
correct.
Like, it says something about if there are proportional issues,
right,
that would counter that on somebody else's agenda. And I was
correct.
Wondering, because the proportional aspect kind of seems to be the
yes
issue for a lot of people. So, like, what is proportional? I mean,
right.
And like, I don't know, what are some concrete examples? Because I know that you can't really compare, you know, the stock market to
sure.
pro-life issues, but when you're comparing
right.
one pro-life issue to another, how does it become proportional? That was my main question.
Right. It's a great question, John. And that document, as you know, the USCCB's document is good. And it maintains, it really toes the line on magisterial teaching because, John, as you have rightly stated, the magisterium has been clear. What comes to mind immediately for me is Christi Fidelis Laici, paragraph 38 from Pope St. John Paul the Great, where he makes clear as well that the life issues, and he says, the right to life. He doesn't single out abortion, but he says the right to life. After listing all these other rights that we have, right, a right to health, a roof over our heads, education, and more, he says, if the right to life is not defended to the utmost, all other rights are mere illusory. So you are correct. The church teaches that the right to life is the preeminent issue. But now when it comes to the different, issues like abortion, euthanasia, embryonic stem cell research, physician-assisted suicide, all of these are life issues. How do we prioritize? The church gives us a principle, and that's what the USCCB does, gives us that same principle that when we're considering these different matters, there can be, you know, proportionate reasons to vote for someone who, and I like to use this as an example, let's say you had a kind of Osama bin Laden kind of character running for president in the United States, who just happens to be pro-life when it comes to abortion. But he's in favor of genocide when it comes to all Christians, Jews, right? And we could go down the list. Well, we could certainly vote for a candidate who is actually pro-abortion, but is against things like genocide against, you know, 70 million Catholics, 100 million Christians, and so forth. That's what we're talking about, and what the bishops are talking about when we talk about proportionate reason. And so we really have to get down to brass tacks. And of course, the church does not micromanage. The church gives us the principles, and we got to use our as we say in the Marine Corps, our brain housing unit, in order to apply these principles. And Catholics tend, you know, there can be good Catholics who disagree on this point, but I argue there simply is no proportionate reason. I know some argue that climate control is proportionate reason because we're talking about the destruction of the planet. I think that is really wrongheaded. But the church doesn't micromanage this. What we need to do as Catholics is take these principles. Look, and I think from just common sense, the life issue is the ultimate issue. Abortion is the ultimate issue among the life issues. Now, the magisterium has not made that conclusion. That's Tim Staples. But I think it's grounded in solid principles. We're talking about over 60 million babies slaughtered in America alone, and the number is growing. I simply cannot see a proportionate reason, barring something like Osama bin Laden running for president. We have to consider the babies, my friends, and we have a real possibility if we vote for life in the coming elections, my friend, we have the real possibility of actually overturning Roe and saving untold hundreds of thousands of babies' lives. But at any rate, folks, there's much more we could say to that end, but I want to thank again all of our callers. You guys were fantastic over these last 2 hours. Please keep Catholic Answers in your prayers. We have a lot of work to do in proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ that we alone possess in full to a world in desperate need. Until next time, God bless you and your entire family.